Dr. Richard Marques is Executive Vice President for Research and Economic Development at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. UAB is supporting work for MITRE with the National Institute of Standards and Technologies on their Cybersecurity Center of Excellence. It's great to see you. Thank you for coming here. I hope you're having a productive trip to Washington, Dr. Marques. Tell me about the work that UAB is doing with NIST on the Cybersecurity Center of Excellence.
We have a faculty in our Department of Computer Science and another faculty, a complementary faculty that's in our Department of Justice Sciences, that work very well together in a center that's primary focus is to understand how it is that cybersecurity can relate back to law enforcement. What is it we're actually going to do to try to get the bad guys arrested and off all of our email accounts?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the focus of what many of our researchers are interested in. We also have some real expertise in some cloud security issues and other cybersecurity issues that we think will fit very well with what MITRE is leading here for the NIST effort.
You're really at the heart of what the chief information officers and chief information security officers and so on that I talk to in the federal government are concerned about as they try to transition to the cloud. Security is the first thing that they're interested in making sure that wherever their information and applications go, that it's secure. What's the relationship like in the, first of all, the relationship that you have with MITRE and then with NIST as far as how things are getting funded and how things are able to progress as we go through the stops and starts of continuing resolutions and a little bit of funding here and a little bit there?
Well, the MITRE program is just starting, so we haven't yet gotten to the point where we've gotten frustrated because of the starts and stops there. More of that frustration is actually evident on the front having to do with health research. This year, we're going to bring home around $225 million of research money from the National Institutes of Health, the primary funder, of course, for health research here in the U.S. And as you're probably aware, since the doubling ended in about 2008, funding for the National Institutes of Health has not increased at all, certainly in real dollars, and there have been some sequestration hits that were exceedingly difficult on the places like our institution that are really dependent upon these federal dollars for jobs, for our researchers, for our employees, as well as for the progress that we can make. We will get programs started, but when there are really hard times, as there were a couple of years ago, success rates can get down into the single digits. For every 100 applications that are submitted, maybe 8 or 9 will get funded. That means there are a huge number of very meritorious applications that are not going to be funded. What that translates to back to the local scene are faculty members who are tenured, and we pick up their salary, of course. But the people in their laboratory really don't have much of a safety net. And so rather than having a skilled workforce that can count on the fact that they're going to have jobs for this foreseeable future, if we go through these cycles of ups and downs, we lose our experienced people. And then when the grants come back through at some later time, we have to hire new folks and start all over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very precarious position that the universities are in as they try to not only maintain a workforce to do the work that we've contracted to do with the government, but also with respect to training students. We don't have as much money to support students when our grant portfolio is down, number one. And number two, our researchers are less eager to take on students and the responsibilities that go with that when they're not sure if they're going to be funded after 2 or 3 years when their current grant expires. So this whole bust boom cycle that we've been seeing on the health side is something that's of great concern to researchers at these universities that are so dependent on the federal government.
It is obvious that the size of the number of dollars that will be available going forward will be smaller. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is we would prefer consistency and certainty in exchange for the larger dollar amounts that we've seen in the past. I know we would like to have both.
Sure.
It doesn't seem that that's realistic going forward. Am I hearing you correctly?
Well, we aren't ready to completely give up on the fact that NIH might be singled out as a national priority that would really merit increases in funding. Certainly, though, the kind of one-time monies that we got way back in the, as Obama was being elected with the stimulus dollars, that kind of boom isn't something we need right now. I mean, if we could project something like 3 or 4% increases per year on an ongoing basis that we could count on, it would bring great stability to the workforce as it exists now. And it would also, I think, help the students who can get very discouraged when they see how hard it is for their mentors to really continue to get these grants in this kind of an environment.
Dick Marchese of the University of Alabama at Birmingham is here. And you talk about the students, and I'm reminded of something else in your portfolio, and that is the cybersecurity issue that we talked about at the beginning. We hear about the cyber workforce in this city all the time. What does that look like? What does the development of that workforce look like at the academic level at this point in time, Dick?
At our university, we have a philosophy that really says if you're going to come out of UAB and have cyber credentials, it's going to be because you had some real hands-on experience. Our faculty are very gifted at taking real data. We have, I think, the largest spam mine in the country, at least on the academic side. But we take this real data and allow the students to really go crazy with it, see where it is the connections are, trace back all of this spam stuff to the few sources where it's being generated, and get the kind of experience that we think is going to make them invaluable to future employers once they leave the university. So we have a very teaching-intensive kind of approach to turning out our cybersecurity graduates. It doesn't allow us to do as many students as we might otherwise do, but the students who come from our program get jobs really primarily in the private sector. I mean, they get outbid, and they're very, very valued because of this real-world kind of background that they have.
So I want to connect that to what you mentioned before about the work that you're doing in coordination with law enforcement organizations.
Yeah.
The key there is attribution. The law enforcement agencies have to know who to go after, and it sounds like that's what you're preparing people to be able to do. That, from what I understand, is one of the toughest nuts to crack in the cyber world, is to be able to actually go back and pin it on somebody so that then you can go ahead and catch them and prosecute them.
Yeah, one of our star faculty members is a guy named Gary Warner, who is actually responsible for finding the source of the Zeus virus that was terrorizing things 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able really to trace this back into Eastern Europe in a way that allowed the various government agencies, both Interpol and our government, to really zero in on where that was all coming from. And that actually led to breaking that ring up, and it did lead to some arrests. So if we can continue to have the good relationships that we have with law enforcement, whether it's Secret Service or folks from Homeland Security or ICE or wherever, we think that giving students this prioritization where they are not only interested in figuring out what the bad things are, but trying to figure out where they're coming from and how to actually get those folks arrested, that gives us a niche that we feel is a very it's a very positive place for our students to be coming out of our program.
What is the key, in your view, to maintaining those good relationships with federal law enforcement? What are the things that you want to continue to stress, and maybe things that you're not doing that you'd like to develop to contribute to them, to add value to them? And what do you need from them to continue to add value to you?
Yeah, we had some conversations actually earlier today exactly about that issue. We are very interested in some of the programs for fellowship money, scholarship money, that allow some of these students to trade their ability to garner scholarships with service later to the government. We think that's a great program that would, again, keep us in good stead with some of these government agencies that we want to work with. We think that we need to listen and make sure that we are teaching the kinds of skills that the government agencies are going to find most valuable. In addition, we do a lot of training for folks that are already out in the field, and that's another way to really cement relationships with some of these government agencies and make sure that our skills are lined up with where they want to go and that we're able to help some of their folks come back for some advanced training that'll help them in the future.
And part of the trickiest, one of the trickiest elements of that, I imagine, you said you want to be able to provide what they're going to find most valuable, not necessarily what they find most valuable today because of how quickly the trajectory of this landscape is changing.
That's true. And I mean, for instance, one of the things that we are proposing in a grant application we've just submitted, actually, is to try to bring some order to an idiosyncratic way that people go after hard drive data. Mm-hmm. There's not a real playbook that shows you how it is you can go into a hard drive, find what it is you need to get a conviction, follow all the rules of evidence, and come out with something that's going to lead to a prosecution on the backside. So we are proposing to bring some of those standards forward that ought to help law enforcement really be able to hang the bad deeds on the bad guys in a more effective way than they're doing now.